Hi, Dan.
Jason, something is wrong.
Are you home? Are you in your chair?
A desk and a chair.
And a Yeti desk, microphone with googly eyes on it?
It's staring at me. It's a little unsettling.
For those who don't know, Dan's wife put googly eyes on every object in their home while he was gone.
Many, many objects. Both the HomePods, one of the speakers in here, my iMac stand, all of the Legos on my shelf. She bought a bag of like 1,000 googly eyes.
Yep. Have you taken any of them off, or do you like to? Are you enjoying them?
I am enjoying them. The ones on the fridge door have fallen off a couple times, but yeah, some of them have. I think I removed one set somewhere because I thought they might like melt to something.
The T-Robot? T-Robot?
Yeah, I haven't used the T-Robot, but I will remove them before that because I don't want to have to clean off googly eye adhesive.
Melted googly eyes?
Yeah, that seems less fun.
No, but the who knew the Yeti was so adorable?
It is. It's very cute. Yeah. This one has eyelashes and everything, so
it's a nice touch.
It feels like I compared it. Maybe this is, I think this is after your time, but to me, it feels like Pee-wee's Playhouse, where all of the anime,
right.
All his furniture head was like animated furniture. Very strange.
I saw Pee-wee's Playhouse. It was after my time, but that was we were tuned in enough to know that that was a thing that was happening that was worth looking at as teenagers or whatever.
It was like a SpongeBob, right? Like that's like a thing that appeals to
exactly
people, even outside the age group.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's right. So you're settling in. You've only been back a handful of days.
Yeah, it's there's always a little, reentry adjustment, trying to get back into your groove. And the first couple of days were kind of rough, but it's getting there. I've got plenty of projects to do, so I need to kind of get cracking. I can't spend too much time wallowing in my I'm not on vacation anymore regrets.
Yeah, it was a good, you had a good run.
Yeah, had a good run. It's all over now.
That was it. Back to it. You got to get back to it.
To the grind.
You're also way, not as time shifted as somebody from the West Coast going to Europe, but you were there for 3 weeks, right? So,
yeah. It's not as bad coming back in this direction. I still wake up a little bit on the early side, but like it's been getting better every night. Like first couple nights, like Tuesday night, I had to do the rebound at 10 o'clock and I was like falling asleep during that. Monday night, I think the guys wanted to do Biff recording at like 6:30 or something. And I was like, well, first of all, that's when my wife gets home, so I'm not going to do that. Second of all, I don't think I'm going to make it to like 8:30 or whatever. And I was like trying to read this book and just like falling asleep. So I was out at like 9:30 Monday night. But yeah, it's every day it gets a little bit better. And by next week, I'll be back on as regular a schedule as I get here.
Right. But this is our regular time. So we're back.
Indeed. It's a lot easier at noon on a Friday because that's a pretty...
That's why we do it now.
I wouldn't be sleeping now anyways. Yeah, it's good. I like it.
That's why
I'm at the top of my game.
That's why Kalandar has chosen this time for us.
I'm somewhat at the top of my game. I am also sometimes not at the top of the game. As I pointed out on Twitter today, I had cast about for some help with a problem in the Incomparable member Slack, and somebody in there pointed out, you yourself wrote an article about how to solve this problem like 2 months ago, and I was like, yeah, I remembered that I had this problem. I had forgotten that I had written an article about it. And, even today I told Kat that, and she's like, yeah, I was going to ask if you had written something about that. Like, that seems like it would have been smart. I was like, yeah, I'm going to blame that on the fact that I wrote it, like, a couple weeks before the wedding, so everything in my brain has gone out of it. But, yes, this was my story about how I was trying. So I have an assignment that I need to do that requires I put my iPhone on the betas. And now that I'm back, I feel okay about it. I'm not going anywhere for a while. It's not as critical. And the beta on my iPad has felt more stable with each passing release. So I'm going to take the plunge. But the problem was I got that error again where it's like, oh, there's not enough space on your Mac to back this up. And I was like, God, I remember dealing with this with the iPad, but I cannot remember how I solved it. It turned out I should have Googled myself or just looked on Six Colors for how to fix that.
But I'm glad it was helpful.
Yeah, me too. Past Dan. That guy was really on top of things.
Yeah, Bachelor Dan.
That's right. Not like
old married Dan doesn't know what technology is.
Nope, not even a clue.
So while you were gone, my home bridge stopped working. That was fun. So I got to do some debugging of command line. I don't actually know what happened, but it was not functioning. And then I would try to, I tried doing this thing where I was like editing the preferences to see if I could, you know, the settings files in the .homebridge folder, right? Because it's all happening in command line. And then I would try to launch the app and it would fail. And I kept thinking it was in this thing where there was something configured wrong and it was failing. Later, I realized that the error was that the port was already in use. And so apparently what was happening, and I still don't, to this day, don't know why this happened, but apparently Homebridge was running, but not doing anything.
Sure. Yeah.
And since it was already running, I couldn't debug it because it was already running. So I had to... Basically, I ended up turning off the launch daemon setting or whatever that makes it auto launch, and then I could debug it. And then, which I did, and it worked fine because of the changes I'd been making all along, and updating the software and all of that had led to the right conclusion. At which point, I put it back in the startup items, and now my Homebridge works again. But it was one of those things of like, this is the kind of software that is harrowing if you need to do something, so you just kind of leave it there until it doesn't work, and then you go, all right, well, I guess I need to do something now, and then you end up doing something just because you've got to. But it was one of those where I was casting around for a while, and I think in the end basically something broke, and then I haphazardly updated everything, and now
that sounds about right.
Now it works.
I took my first dive into Homebridge the other day.
Oh, I saw this.
I posted a how-to about this I posted a link to a how-to on 9.5 Mac where the writer had figured out how to get their fan, which has like an infrared remote, working with Homebridge. I thought, oh, that sounds pretty good. We have a tower fan in the bedroom. I wonder if I can do that. And so I spent some time mucking around with it, and I installed it on my Synology via Docker, which is a thing that some people really like.
Yeah.
And
oh, this is have we talked about the fact that you have a Synology now?
I don't remember.
I don't think we have. That was your server solution as you bought a Synology NAS?
I did. I bought a Synology NAS, and that was probably, I don't know, a couple months ago now. And so I really like it. I have to say it's incredibly powerful, and the operating system that it runs is actually quite friendly and quite good in my experience. And there's a ton of stuff you can do on it, which is really nice. And it takes up a little less room. And more to the point, it's got a ton of storage on it. So I really am enjoying that. The biggest thing I need to do is just sort of, I've been meaning to like consolidate all my files on it. And what I kind of wish, I don't know if I have a good solution for this yet, is like, I've got a bunch of old hard drives. A lot of them are backups of computers. And a lot of those files are already probably on the Synology. But I may be missing some here and there. So kind of what I want to do is like hook up these drives, which you can do pretty easily. You can plug them right into the Synology, and then just sort of say like, copy over all the files that aren't already on the Synology. I don't know a good way to do that yet. The Synology does have a built-in thing that can scan for duplicates. But the biggest problem I've been running in with that right now is that I copied over both my photo library as well as an old iPhoto library. And so, of course, it's like, oh, everything in the iPhoto, all the files, like the pictures are duplicates. And it's like, well, that's stupid. There's no easy way for me to be like, just show me anything in these two files that is not, like, show me anything that's in the iPhoto library that's not in the photo library. And if it's like, oh, nothing, everything got imported, then I mean, great, I'll just trash the iPhoto library. But there's always that part of me that's like, oh, what if there's like a picture or two in there that I forgot or didn't import successfully? So I'm paranoid. But, you know, with 4 terabytes of storage, it's, you know, at the same time, I don't feel like, yeah, it's not a big deal right now.
The pressure's off a little bit. Yeah, I feel that way about my the Drobo, where it's like, you know, 16, it tells me, terabytes of storage. It's like, I'm fine. It's fine. I'm okay. Yeah. I did have a drive die. First time in a while. I had one. We had a power outage. And I think, I don't know, that sometimes that is what triggers it, is drive turns itself off and then it turns itself back on. And one of the drives didn't die, but its health went to like warning status. And you know, I had a drive that had been sitting there for three years, as I bought a bunch of them, and it was sitting there literally for this moment of if I need to replace a disc in the Drobo. And so it did like a few hours of getting its storage set safe, and then I pulled the drive out and slapped in a new drive, and then it spent like a day kind of like integrating it into the whole
thing. Yeah.
At all those points, the data was readable. It was just, it's just kind of slow. Right. And now it's back up and running. And so now I went and I bought some more discs. I bought a couple more drives, knowing that, you know, for the next one. But the way I've got it set up, if a drive fails, no data is lost. And then I pull that drive and put in a new one, and then it works its magic.
In theory, I believe the Synology is the same. I only have a two bay Synology, but they're mirrored. So essentially, great. You lose one, you're fine. You just want to slap a new one in and have everything, you know, fixed up so that you have redundancy again. The biggest challenge I've also run into, and I haven't quite figured out a good solution for this yet, is that I'd still like to do a cloud backup of the information on there. And Backblaze's standard, you can't use the standard Backblaze client to do that as easily.
Right.
I mean, I could, in theory, I mean, it mounts as a network drive on the Mac. So in theory, you could run through that, but that seems incredibly inefficient, because then you'd have a network. But it does have like a kind of like an enterprise level thing that you can install directly on the Synology. But then it's done via, it's like metered via data, more like a, you know, S3 or something like that, where it's like charges you for how much data you upload, small amounts, but like it adds up. And it's like, well, it wouldn't be that much, like, because I don't have a ton of data. I'm not an enterprise level customer, but like, you know, it would cost me probably, you know, $100, $150 a year or something, which is like a little more than you pay for the standard client, but not outrageous. So I may end up doing that just for peace of mind at some point. But yeah, right now there's not a good solution for that. My Backblaze currently contains the old backup of the Mini, so I have that. Just in case, for the moment. But yeah, I think the biggest challenge with all of this stuff is like, I really wish I didn't have to think about it. I really wish I didn't have to worry about like what data is where. This is one of the things I love about iOS, is like all your data is on your devices and most everything gets backed up to the cloud, like really critical stuff. Like occasionally there's some stuff that's not really accounted for, but mostly, you know, stuff is either stored in cloud storage that is accessible via my phone or is on the device and then backed up by the iCloud backup. And it's like, I don't have to worry about files and duplicate files and all that jazz. Like, I feel pretty confident that everything is just backed up. And, you know, I don't worry about it. But like with the Mac, I have all these, like I have decades of files and I have all these backups I made over the years before there were good backup solutions, right? Like before Time Machine, it was like, all right, well, I've got a drive here. I can either do a bootable clone or just essentially copy a bunch of stuff from my Mac onto this external drive and then, you know, remember to do that every once in a while. And so I have all these little vestiges of like a half backups of various computers from the last two decades. And it's like, this is just a mess. It's just a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I have the same issues and I don't have a good solution for it.
The solution, I think, is to hire Brian Hamilton to just come and fix all my files for me. Because apparently he spent some time doing that for himself. And I was like, that sounds like something that I would really like to have done, but not something that I would like to do.
I think I was thinking of, I don't know if ChronoSync has a feature that would do this, but like an app like that, that is basically, you can point it at different sets of files and say, do I have this or not? And if I don't, like, look at this whole volume and does anything match this? And I know that would be time intensive, but that would be totally worth it if you could, like, plug in a drive and say, okay, is there anything on this drive that is not on this drive.
Right.
And exactly. If there is, copy it. And I bet something like Chronosync could probably do that. That's Econ Technologies. What was that? You mentioned another thing. Oh, yeah. Fat Cat Software has like Power Photos.
I have had that open on my tabs for a while.
And they do a photo search for duplicates. But I think the workflow there is, well, maybe not. I think you can import all your photos into a library and then have it weed out the duplicates. It might also be able to compare between libraries and find all the duplicates. I'm not 100% on that one. But there are some techniques there where you could get the peace of mind, potentially, that, you know, all your photos are not getting thrown away. But right. But right. I have the same thing, which is I have drives that I think I have all the files off of them. But I am really reluctant to throw them away.
Sure.
Because what if that has the only copy of something?
Yeah. What if you have the only copy of that file that you haven't looked at in 20 years?
That you might
need.
Which
is the worst part, right? Like, you might need it, but you also might not if you haven't looked for it in 20 years, right?
Don't,
but you might. But you might.
I just had this happen. I was trying to do some historical Apple financial data charts, and I know I had an Excel file that Rick LePage originally made from back at Macworld. That was the Apple financial results and number of Macs sold every quarter going back into the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had it somewhere, but there was a real question of, like, do I have it somewhere anymore? And in the end, I found a copy of at least one version of it, and it was on my server. It was not on my Mac, but on the server I went. It connected there into the Spotlight search on the Mac Mini, and I did find a couple of different things, but it's one of those things where I hadn't looked for that thing in 10 years, but it was there. So, you know, that's my feeling is these drives are so huge now that I would really rather err on the side of just keeping everything if I can.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and that's kind of how I feel about, like, cloud storage, too. It's like, I know there's a lot to poo-poo about cloud storage and making sure that your data is secure and all that, but, like, I mean, man, if it isn't so much better than so many of the things we used to have, right? Like, I can drop all my stuff in Dropbox and be pretty, you know, pretty sure that no matter what happens, I will have it somewhere. Yeah. And I don't have to worry about it, right? Like, either it's going to be on Dropbox's server, in which case I can get it on any computer I've got, or all the local copies that I've cached, you know, will have it on one of my computers and all that stuff will stay in sync. Etc. Like, to me, yeah, I know Dropbox has been on kind of contentions recently in terms of their business ideas, but that feature, the basic core feature of Dropbox, still works really well.
Yeah, works for me. I you know, I rely on it. I'm not at the point. I'm at the point now where I feel like I could see how Dropbox would be something that I drop eventually. But I'm not anywhere near there now. I know there are a lot of people who don't use all the features that I do, and they're like, "Oh, I can just use iCloud Drive now." It's like, well, maybe you can.
It's but better. I can't. Better than it's one step closer than it used to be. But yeah, it still lacks stuff that we can do in Dropbox because you and I both use the file request feature, and there's no good analog for that in iCloud.
That's such a great feature.
It makes life so easy for us.
And I know there are ways you could do it. You can, like, have an upload form, but to use the Dropbox infrastructure for files, which is very robust to get files from other people. For those who don't know, file request, it gives you a link that you can give to people, and they go there, and there's basically a little upload button on a web page, and they give you the file, and that file shows up in your Dropbox. And it's a great way. You don't have to have people like, oh, let's share a folder, and you can put it in a folder, or why don't you upload it somewhere and tell me where that is? You just give them this link and say, upload your file, and then it comes into your Dropbox, and then it's in your workflow. It's a super convenient feature. So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I'm not convinced Apple will be implementing something like that anytime soon, but...
You never know. John Syracuse is the one person, by the way, who refuses to do that.
Nothing about that surprises me.
For people who don't know, the one person who does not use any of these file paths for podcasts that I do with him is John. John always puts it, and he uses Dropbox. John always puts it on Dropbox or on Google Drive, but generally on Dropbox. And then he sends me a download link his file on Dropbox.
Yeah, it's, like, it's funny, too. I will sometimes put stuff in the shared folder that we already have for the Incomparable.
Yeah, sure. Sure, that's like the group shared folder that we had back.
Right.
And I don't know if I made a John and Jason transfer folder if he would use that, because then he doesn't even need to send me a link. He just drops it in there, and then I pull it out, and he goes about his business, and it's great. I don't know if he would use that or if he would be saying, like, no, this is fine.
John puts his file on a zip disk, and then he has that zip disk couriered to you. It's very...
That's right.
It's very... It's expensive.
And then I insert the zip disk into a an emulator. No, I insert a disk, zip disk that's connected to my iPad.
That's right.
Using
that's right.
files in iOS 13, and then I copy the file off. That's how we do it.
Works like magic.
That's right. USB zip disk with an adapter. I forget that zip disks were recent enough that they did do a USB version, which is connectable to computers today.
Yeah, somebody was doing that. That it was going around for a little bit. But when I had a zip disk that was a SCSI zip
disk. Yeah, mine too.
It's like, yeah, make that work with your iPad. I would like to see that.
Zip disk on my G3. Computing... I think my power computing tower had an internal zip disk.
The blue and white G3.
And the blue and white G3 did too.
It's sitting in my office right now, has an internal zip drive in it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, yeah, that was a good thing. I was amazed.
You have a zip drive in your room with you right now.
Right now. Yes. There's probably a zip disk in here somewhere. I just don't know where it is. And it's probably dead by this point.
I thought you were going to say there's probably a zip disk still in it. And I'd be like, wow, that's very impressive.
No, that is.
That's a bet.
I don't think so, but yeah, I haven't turned that computer on in a long time, so God only knows.
You don't want to boot off a zip disk; it's very slow.
No, God, but it was such a big deal.
Yeah, for people who don't remember that era, we were using floppies, which was 1 megabyte,
1.4 megabytes.
Yeah, at that point, because floppies had evolved into these
that was the high density
floppies
yes.
where you could get more than a megabyte on there. But a zip disk was 100 megabytes.
100? That was insane. It was just crazy.
For something that was like a thick floppy disk, and it was using hard drive technology, but it was basically a thick floppy disk. But it fit, you know, whatever that is, 70 floppies, basically, on one. It was a huge thing for external storage for a period of time.
Right, because for a long time, there wasn't... Well, some Macs had CD burners, but that was a pain, right? Because it didn't work like a disk, right? You had to burn stuff.
And in the early iMac period, there were computers, and the early iMacs were those computers that literally didn't come with writable storage.
So if you
need to put something on something and then carry it somewhere, which we did back in the day, like the iMacs, you couldn't. And so you could buy a floppy drive or you could buy a zip drive. But yeah, in any business where you had like large numbers of files, like the zip disk was a big deal. I remember because the hard drives weren't that big either. So I had archival zip drive stuff where I would offload. Speaking of what we talk about now on external hard drives, I would put files on a zip drive, and it was amazing because I could have all those files that I had stored on 50 floppies were now on a zip drive. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how big the hard drive is in this blue and white. I'm going to guess 4 gigabytes. I think 4 gigabytes because...
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, that was pretty big because like I remember that my original LC had a 40 megabyte hard drive, and then the Performa that I had in between the LC and the G3 had a 1.2 gigabyte, I think. So I think this one had 4 gigabytes, which was pretty amazing at the time, you know, to have that much space. But again, like you said, there was no... I got it with the zip disk installed because there was no other way. Like, I wasn't going to buy a floppy drive.
Right.
And there was no other option. That was it. It's literally it.
Yeah.
So, and I think the computer lab in our campus did, in fact, have... There were G3s in there, and this was in college, and I think it had zip drives in a bunch of them. Although those computer labs were just... breeding grounds for viruses. Like, you never wanted to put a floppy drive disk in any of those computers because they would just eat all of your files.
Yeah. The meanwhile, I have 16 terabytes. I'm looking now. 16.
That's right. That's such as the world that we live in. I mean, my phone, you know, sitting here has a 256 gigabyte hard drive in a tiny little device that is way smaller.
It's amazing.
Than that G3. Sometimes we marvel. Sometimes we sit back and marvel.
Zip disks were big. That's what I'm saying. There are mini disks in the Matrix.
Oh,
like, there
was
that period there where everybody was really trying to find new new data storage formats, like rewritable CDs and mini disk and zip drives and all sorts of stuff like that. Before, I guess we just gave up and used USB drives.
Right. Well, and slash the internet.
And using networks to transfer files.
That was the big change. And I especially the rewritable stuff, which is like now when you look at it, it's just kind of like a weird footnote blip. Like for rewritable optical storage,
yeah,
where it was like really it only was kind of in its heyday for a few years there between, you know, the iMac getting rid of the floppy drive and network slash USB becoming a real big thing. So like there was, I don't even know if I owned a computer. I'm sure I owned a computer that did burning, but like I don't think I ever even really used a rewritable CD.
I tried ever. And it was not convenient. To do so, it was not.
Yeah,
not a, I'm trying a particularly to think, convenient thing.
I don't even remember if this DVD drive in there. I think you could. So there was a time where, like, so I have a DVD drive in this, but I think there was a time where you could have a DVD drive or a CD burner, but it didn't. They used like different lasers, so you couldn't. Like, it took a while before they had one that did both. Like, that was kind of a big deal. The Super Drive, remember, with the in the titanium power book? Yeah, it's like, oh, it can do all these things. And it was like, that's amazing. It can write and read DVDs. What? And so I think I mainly lived in the era where I did not have drives that could... I had drives that could play DVDs, but not make CDs, because I judged that being able to watch DVDs was more important than burn a CD.
I burned a lot of CDs in, a period of time in the late 90s, but now people are like, what's a CD?
I don't even have an optical drive on any of my computers anymore, so...
I don't either. I have a USB Blu-ray drive that I use to rip discs.
Yeah, so my Xbox will be the only thing in my house and that will play an optical disc.
Yeah, and I've got some consoles that'll do that. But my car has a CD player in it that I don't think has ever been used.
My car no longer has a CD player in it because when I removed the head unit, it had a CD player, which like that I had never used. I'd literally never put a disc in. And it was amazing when I took out the head unit and compared it to the size of the new head unit I was putting in. The one with the old one was huge. It was this like full size, like it's basically as tall as like the touchscreen faceplate,
right?
Because it had a 6-disc changer in it that I literally never used. Huh. And so when you put in the new one, it was like, oh, it's tiny because there's no, you don't need to put anything
no moving
in there.
Parts.
It's just the circuitry. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And that's the CarPlay stereo that we put in Jamie's car. Same deal. Which was, you know, we don't need. Yeah, my the Nissan Leaf has a screen that actually like folds open so that you can get to the disc, which again we have never put a disc in.
Because why? Know. I mean, why? You might want to someday. Someday, maybe you want to listen to a old mix CD. I don't know.
I found those because when we got the Honda Civic, it didn't have an auxiliary in.
Sure.
And it didn't have a cassette player. It only had a disc. And so I had all this stuff on my like iPod or iPhone or whatever it was at the time. It was the iPhone. I had all my music on my iPhone, and I couldn't get it into the thing when we got it in LA, and I was bringing it up here, and then when we were driving around here. And I finally replaced it, but for a while, I actually was like, let's listen to music I enjoyed in 2002. Because... That's it.
Did it play those? Do you remember when they had MP3 CDs?
I never made.
I don't think I had anything that could play them.
And it was literally just you put MP3s on the data of
right,
a CD,
because
you could read them.
Way more MP3s than if you burnt. You could only fit 70 minutes of music if you burned it as audio, but you could fit like hundreds of MP3s.
I think I made one and realized how not compatible it was, and then I didn't worry about it after that. So anyway, in that car until I finally ripped it out and put a new radio in, which is the one that then we ripped out and replaced with CarPlay. I was back to music that I liked more than a decade before, because those were the CDs that I had.
Right, sure. Yeah, I think I threw out all the burn CDs I found at various points when I was cleaning out the house, because I was like, A, half of these probably aren't readable anymore because they do degrade, and B, I literally don't need anything on any of these, because literally, so when I used to work at my old office, not to say too much about this, but one of my coworkers was very invested in, say, finding things off trucks. And he would just constantly burn literally like a dozen CDs a day, which was really not great. But he would burn stuff and give it to me. And he just, I had insane numbers of burned CDs that just were full of stuff that he had downloaded. Just a lot. And I was like, I don't need any of these anymore. Because like a lot of them were like episodes of TV shows from the mid-2000s. And like, yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, that's, we all had that guy. That, in those heady early piracy days of the internet, that happened a lot. And those are the people especially who would like download things and burn them to CDs. And then they would never even use a lot of it, listen to a lot of it. Right. They just were kind of hoarding it.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was definitely all part of that. That's why Apple got so much pushback for the whole rip, mix, burn thing, which was frustrating because mix CDs were great, and it wasn't just a piracy thing. But that did happen. I have thrown away some of my old burned CDs, but some of them I've kept because some of them have like a friend had a super rare track that was on a CD that I didn't have and that I was able to get that file and then burn it. And it was like, that's a song that I had now. And I think I've got all those as MP3s at this point, but it's one of those things that is that on Apple Music? Probably not. And so it's the same story we started with, which is, can I throw this away? Or is there something precious on here? Well, I've got this is true. I have, somewhere in this garage, I have four little like zipper books that are full of my entire CD collection. Mostly because the idea was you could rip the CD at a decent quality, but you need to legally, you know, you can't really sell your CD back or whatever.
Sure,
that's the license of it. Of course, I think the moment that iTunes matched everything, I had a legal digital copy, regardless of the existence of the CD.
Yep.
Province. And so one of these days, I hate to say it, but one of these days I'm going to have to go through those books and basically throw out any CD that is not rare or has some sort of personal meaning, because they're just wasting. No. They're just a waste of space now, because I've got the digital rights. Not only do I have the digital rights to own those because of iTunes Match, but I'm also now a music service subscriber and probably will be for the rest of my life. And therefore, unless it's not on a service, it's totally irrelevant to have those.
And that's where it was weird for me, because I collected a lot of CDs that were both... movie soundtracks, which have improved in their availability, but have often been something that you can't get on music services. And so I ripped a bunch of those back in the day. And I also have, I don't think I'll even necessarily listen to most of these anymore, but I was really big in college into anime. I have a ton of Japanese anime soundtracks, and those are definitely not
those are things you got to keep.
But that's probably probably easily half my collection, because I really did not listen to a lot of pop music. And so I think almost probably 50% of what I have in there may not be on a streaming service, but it's also not something I've listened to in like 20 years. So it's not even that big a deal. But yeah, same sort of need to skim through those things.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody out there, I hope you enjoy burning this podcast to a CD. That's how podcasts work, right?
Yep. You burn it to an MP3 CD, you find someone's car, and you play it in that.
Yeah. Just sit there.
Listen to it.
Yeah.
It's a driveway
moment. Roll down the window. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess we'll be back next week, right? Like, that's the thing we have now.
It's on the calendar.
You're back. All hail calendar.
All hail calendar.
All right. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.